This meeting is now being recorded.
Hello, folks, and welcome to the 52nd plenary of the CCT review. Is there anyone who is only on the phone and not in Adobe Connect?
Yeah, this is Jamie Hedlund. I'm on the phone.
All right, thanks, Jamie. And are there any updates to any statement of interest? Okay, great. We're able to take attendance. I thought we would jump right in with recommendation number one. Why not start with recommendation number one? So Brenda, if you could put up the slides, I'd appreciate it. And do I have control, or should I tell you next slide, or what's the best way to proceed?
I'm going to give you control, Jonathan. 1 second.
Oh, my goodness.
There you go. There you go. Thanks.
All right. Very exciting. Okay, so this is just a little experiment in terms of, you know, how to discuss the recommendation and the changes. So in addition to discussing the substance of recommendation one, and let me know if this seems like a good way to have the conversation as well. Thanks, folks. So if you recall, the elements of recommendation number one was the proactive proactive data collection policy, the idea of establishing, and this is where, you know, the specificity becomes a challenge, but began as a recommendation to hire a data scientist or to simply establish an entity within ICANN that proactively collected data for policy development, both staff initiatives and community initiatives. And we mentioned a potential new hire of a data scientist. Community reaction to this was 4 comments in favor, 2 that were not necessarily against, but were concerned about cost and sort of the cost benefit of this recommendation. A couple that were neutral, 1 clarification, and then there were 14 comments that were silent on the recommendation. So all these considered, it, so there was a positive reaction to this particular recommendation. And please raise your hand or speak up if you want to stop me anywhere along the way. If we look at the primary objections or concerns raised around recommendation number one, they basically fell into 3 categories. 1 was cost versus benefit. There were 2, the registry stakeholder group and NewStar just concerned that the cost would outweigh the benefits. There was some concern over data security. Then there was a concern raised by ICANN staff that it was in some ways redundant with the office that Elisa and Brian are part of now, which is there to facilitate data identification and acquisition and analysis at the request of working groups and review teams. So those were sort of the 3 objections that were raised. I just wanted to go through them one at a time. On the cost side, I think there was some confusion because it felt like it was just this open-ended request that ICANN start collecting all the data they could think to collect related to the domain name industry. And so the idea instead was that the actual needs for data collection would be determined on a case-by-case basis. So it wasn't meant to just be an open-ended, start collecting everything you can, but instead be initiative-driven and be determined on a case-by-case basis. And so likewise, cost-benefit would be assessed on a case-by-case basis as well. In other words, if in a particular instance, there was a request for data or a identification of data that should be collected for a particular policy initiative, then cost-benefit should be a part of the discussion around that particular data collection. So this is really meant to be prescriptive, not from a substantive or data standpoint, but really from a policy and objective standpoint, and I think it might have been part of the confusion around the cost. Further, I would say that cost savings are likely because of more effective program problem identification. In other words, if we're driven by anecdotes to bring about a policy initiative either through the strategic plan or through community working groups, et cetera, and haven't really provided evidence for the quantification of the harm or that's being addressed, then we could be launching initiatives that aren't truly necessary. It would allow for more effective policy review. So instead of trying to find data after the fact, be collecting data along the way. And finally, the idea of mid-course correction. In other words, if you build into policy initiatives the notion of checking in on the success factors along the way and something isn't working or part of is working and part isn't working, et cetera, gives the opportunity to make modifications to the policy going forward, which I think has positive cost implications as well. Security. Again, the seemingly open-ended nature of this recommendation made it seem like a catch-all for all the things that we didn't list, and so that led some to suggest, well, we should list the specific data that you want to get so it could be addressed case by case by the by commenters, and the point was to address it case by case going forward, and it wasn't meant to just be an open-ended catch-all of data collection. And the same thing is that data security policies could be developed to facilitate securing data or to make specific recommendations around the anonymization of data or the aggregation of data as necessary. And then finally, on the issue of redundancy, which was an issue brought up by ICANN staff, the primary difference is really just proactive versus reactive data collection. And so the idea being that in the context of an initiative being launched, data would be collected to help define the problem and collected and identified and collected to measure the success of the particular initiative. So it's really just an incremental extension of the current resources that ICANN makes available on a on-demand basis today. In terms of the primary benefits, in terms of trying to expound on them, the idea of this recommendation is the objectification of policy development and review, whether it's ICANN org-based policy development or community-based. And I know the org doesn't do policy development, so initiative development, if you will, right? So it allows for objective problem assessment so they can determine the degree to which something justifies a new initiative. It allows for objective success measures where possible, and it allows for objective program review and opportunity for mid-course correction. There's potential for cost savings because of ongoing data collection and program evaluation and modification. So as I said before, there's one of the benefits, I think, in the long run will in fact be a cost decrease because there won't be unnecessary policies or initiatives that are launched, and the ability to scuttle something if it's got a cost associated with it, but it isn't working, could have long-term cost benefit as well. So all that leads me to new text to try and, as briefly as possible, incorporate these notions into the text of the recommendation itself. So it begins the same, formalize and promote ongoing data collection. In an effort to objectify ICANN policy, the ICANN organization should establish a formal initiative, perhaps including a dedicated data scientist, to facilitate quantitative analysis by staff, contractors, and the community of policy initiatives and review. Specifically, where possible, ICANN staff should proactively collect data to justify policy initiatives, whether ICANN or community-driven. Identify and collect data necessary to measure program success, both incrementally and in retrospect. On a case-by-case basis, this entity would help to ascertain the cost-benefit and security requirements for the data in question. So I would say that the primary changes to this are the idea of, in the second sentence, to facilitate quantitative analysis of the staff, contractors, and the community, of policy initiatives, rather than of the domain name marketplace, which is what was in the previous text of the recommendation, which I think seemed to imply that it was an open-ended request to just start collecting everything that they could, that I think some folks were reacting to. And then we got specific about what the new policy was, which was to proactively collect data before and during a policy initiative. And then finally, a kind of caveat on the end that on a case-by-case basis, would help ascertain the cost benefits and security requirements for the data in question. So it's meant to be more specific in terms of the intention and to bring in some caveats that address some people's concern. So that is my proposal for the new text for recommendation number one, which I propose we keep and that we maintain at the same priority level. So some of what are in the slides would probably make it into the public comment tool as explanation, but hopefully the new recommendation text goes a ways to address some of the concerns that were raised in the public comments while preserving the essence of the recommendation that the majority seemed to favor. So I'm happy to have discussion questions both on substance of the recommendation and on the sort of structure of the presentation. Carlos, go ahead. You seem to be on mute, Carlos.
Hello, 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 hello.
Yeah, we can hear you now, Carlos. Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. Sorry. This is Carlos. Thank you, Jonathan. Just on the substance, when you explained the very last sentence, you talk more about privacy than about security. I don't know if they both go together or if security is a wider definition. The second comment I want to make is actually this was like a heading for very specific data requirements that come next in our initial list of recommendations. Now it has gotten a sense of being a standalone. For me, it was always the introduction for the next four, six data requirements. So I don't know if you prefer to leave it that general and then go into the specific ones. Those are my two comments: privacy and what's the relation with the next set of recommendation, which becomes very specific. It has become like an overarching data requirement. For me, it was always the introduction to our pricing requirements, a very, very specific type of data. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Carlos. Just to answer your question, for me, and again, I can't speak for everyone because this might have been a lack of clarity in the construction of the recommendation, it was never about the following recommendations, but was meant to stand alone as an independent initiative to identify data proactively so that future reviews, both within the CCT and outside the CCT, would be better served. Because what we discovered is that lack of data was something that was sort of a perennial problem for the organization, and so this was an attempt to make proactive organizational change to be proactive in the collection of data. Identification and collection of data for any new initiatives. I think people reacted to it feeling like an open-ended catch-all, and that may be that they thought of it also as an introduction or an addition to the data, specific data requests we were making, and that may have been part of the cause of concern. It was just like that this one was, and let's collect everything else or something like that. And I think that my attempt here to make it independent and more specific hopefully would address that concern. But it was never my intention, at least, that it specifically was a introduction to or related to the other recommendations that we've made. As for your other, your first question about security versus privacy, we could update the last sentence on the case-by-case basis. This entity should ascertain the cost-benefit and security and privacy requirements for the data in question. And if you think that that would make sense for greater clarity, does that text help you with your understanding? Okay, thanks, Carlos. And Waddle, I see a comment in the about seeing the new text, and that's what this is on the screen right now. Waddle is the recommendation for new text for recommendation number one. Lorene, go ahead, please.
Oh, I think actually I don't want to jump the queue. I think David's next. And David, you know I'm always advocating on your behalf.
Oh. And I'm always missing David, so. David, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Maureen, and thank you for being true to form, Jonathan, and jumping over me. a query, I thought there was an inconsistency where we're saying early on establishing a formal initiative, and then later on we talk about an entity. And to me, I thought maybe we should be more specific on that, because are we asking them to create an entity, or is the entity part of an initiative? But somewhere along the line, I thought that needed to be a little bit more precise.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a, you raise a good point, and I don't have a good answer, so I welcome some thoughts on that, because I think when we first discussed this recommendation, several, I think maybe Jamie in particular suggested being less prescriptive about what we were recommending from a structural standpoint, instead saying solve this problem and then let the organization try to find, perhaps in consultation with the community, the best way to, solve the problem generally. And so I think that's leading me, unfortunately, to confused text. Because we initially said let's get a data scientist in there, because that would then give us a scarecrow to refer to throughout the rest of the recommendation. And absent that hire, it's maybe a reference to the department that Elise and Brian are already a part of, and that's what I meant by entity. So I think it's a very good question, and I don't have a good answer yet, but I'll continue to noodle it. But if you have a specific recommendation of how to fix that particular problem of trying to be specific but not prescriptive, I welcome it.
Yeah, happy to have a think about it. I suppose really it's where you could either have, if you keep it broad, having a formal initiative, and you've got perhaps a dedicated data scientist or a specific entity, and then later on you can say this entity or data scientist would help. That way you covered it, and you're just suggesting with a perhaps, unless you want to be more prescriptive, which it may be the case, and maybe we should discuss that we should be specifically recommending an entity or data scientist, because obviously an initiative is very broad, and we could just have a working group set up to discuss it.
Oh, God.
We'd all be dissatisfied with. So it may be we need to be more prescriptive.
Right. And maybe the answer is, I feel lame for asking this, but if there's a name for the data department, we could just say empower this department to perhaps with including a hire of a data scientist or something like that. And then just make reference to the department or something, because that would likely be the entity within the organization that would be affected by the recommendation.
It's a semi-joke. I suppose you could just say Dan Halloran.
That's right. There you go. All right. Thank you, David. Lorene, go ahead.
Thanks. Thanks, Jonathan. I'm actually going to disagree a little bit with David. I think formal initiative is the right way to go and not be prescriptive. And in fact, I would echo that term at the bottom and say this initiative. That way you leave it to ICANN and I suppose the community to decide the best way to effectuate this. I agree with your reaction to working group. I would never suggest creating a working group for this. I would change the language in an effort to create more objective ICANN policy, because objectify has these many meanings, and what you really are asking is an effort to make something more objective. So I think you need to phrase it that way. What was the other point I have in an effort to do? And your use of the term quantitative, do we need the word quantitative? Because I know in a lot of the data analysis that we have done, for example, it's been both quantitative and qualitative, but it's still data, and I didn't know that we wanted to necessarily limit it that way, since I think the main impetus for this was to focus on a more data-driven effort. So I don't know that we want to put boundaries around the type of analysis, but just that there should be a collection of data and an analysis of that data. Otherwise, I like this very much, and I think it's a good improvement over the last, and addresses a lot of the issues raised by the public comments.
Okay, thanks, Lorene. I've written down your comments, and I'll try to make another pass at the text to address them. David, is that a new hand, or is your hand still up? Okay, then I think next in the queue is Jamie.
Thanks, Jonathan. Thanks, all. Just one idea for addressing the concern of the cost-benefit analysis would be to put in a sentence acknowledging that the ICANN data collection would, of course, be constrained by the ICANN mission. It's basically in there as well already when you say it's, for ongoing policy development. But even there, it would be possible to stray beyond ICANN's mission go into areas like the marketing of GTLDs and or other areas that might be outside of ICANN's remit. And the fact that it would be constrained by ICANN's mission is a protection against cost exceeding benefits. Thanks.
Thanks, Jamie. I've been noted that as well. Lorene, go ahead.
Thanks. I had two other comments up that one raised by Jamie's point, and then another that I forgot to raise. When you're talking about security requirements for data in question, I thought that you were using that as an umbrella term to include privacy, confidentiality. We probably could come up with a whole long list. But I'm not sure, actually, that we want to have a whole long list. So I was actually in favor of the broader term security, which I took to include sub-issues such as privacy and confidentiality, which can be viewed a little differently. In terms of the mission and remit issue that Jamie raises, I think that's I think that that's a valid concern. However, I would say that probably relates to each and every one of our recommendations. And therefore, what I would suggest, instead of putting it in this recommendation, perhaps a general statement before any of our recommendations with the observation that all of these are intended to only apply within the scope of ICANN's remit. Otherwise, I think we're going to be wanting to repeat that for a lot of these, and that seems to me to be a little redundant.
Thanks, Maureen. Jamie, what do you feel about an overall arching thing about ICANN's remit?
I think that's a great idea. I think Maureen's absolutely right. It applies to everything, and it's sort of we're already constrained by the mission and bylaws, but repeating that here for all the recommendations, I think makes a lot of sense. Thanks.
Thanks, Jamie. And Aliza, can I put you on the spot to address whether or not you think the changes gently add sufficient specificity to distinguish this recommendation from current capabilities of operations and policy research?
Hi, Jonathan. This is Aliza. Sure. So I do think it gets into a greater specificity, so I do think that's helpful. I guess the one question I had as I was reading this is, how would we be measuring success of this measure? Because as I've mentioned, you know, some of these things my team does. There are also, we're not the only team at ICANN that does research. The Office of the CTO does a lot of, DNS-related research. They're the ones who are developing this new DNS abuse reporting tool, which will serve your recommendations related to that really well. They'll be able to produce a lot of the data that that you commissioned CIDN to do. So I guess my only kind of outstanding thought on this is, you know, if we came back to this 2 years later, let's say we didn't hire a data scientist, for example, how would we explore the notion of success of this measure?
I guess I have a sense of that, and the question is whether or not we should build that into this description, which we can do, but the to eat our own dog food, so to speak. But I guess it would be by looking at work group policy initiatives and reviews and strategic plan initiatives to see if, in fact, their problems were defined via data and whether or not there had been success in implementing interim reviews of those initiatives. Something like that. Does that make sense?
I think so. I mean, I think it's a bit fuzzy, but I think, you know, I think I certainly understand the intention of the recommendation. I think we could build lots of it.
All right. Any other questions or comments? And did people find this to be a relatively clear way to go over the recommendation? All right. Well, absent that, then I got a check mark from Carlos, maybe. All right. Well, thank you for allowing me to guinea pig this discussion, and I will go through and incorporate these comments into another draft. And so next on this, we have Maureen, or no. I guess let's, because of Jordan's absence, let's skip ahead to number five, Maureen, if we could, on the secrets and trusts.
Okay, and some of these are not actually safeguards and trust. they're cross-cutting, which is why I wanted to raise them on a plenary call. I'm wondering if it's possible, Brenda, to get to the text of recommendations. There was that great excerpt from our CCP report where it's just the recommendations that are listed, because I think that would actually help drive this discussion. But specifically while I'm waiting for that, and Brenda, let me know if I haven't been clear on what I'm asking for. But specifically what I had proposed in an earlier email is that we should at least discuss combining some of the recommendations that overlap in terms of subject matter, even though different parts of the review team recommended them. So, for example, on this, David, I'm giving you a heads up because you're the person I'm going to want to weigh in on this. Recommendation 10 talks about the costs related to defensive registration fees. And the specific recommendation, since I'm not seeing it on the screen yet, is the ICANN community should consider whether the costs related to defensive registration for the small number of brands registering a large number of domains can be reduced. And, of course, David has looked very closely at rights protection mechanisms as part of the safeguards team, and in fact, the recommendation 40, which maybe we can take a look at recommendation 40, which is on page 16. Thank you. Recommendation 40 is a full impact study to ascertain the impact of the new GTLD program on the cost and effort required to protect trademarks in the DNS. And then the rest of the recommendation talks about the study being repeated and specific timing. So it struck me that these are this recommendation for a study in 40 and this recommendation to consider the costs related to defensive registrations, especially for brands, are related and perhaps could be consolidated. So that was the first part of this agenda item. So I welcome people's views on that, and I particularly also want to hear from David on whether you think these can be combined. And I'm not sure who on the consumer choice team actually held the pen for recommendation 10, but whoever that is, I certainly would appreciate hearing from you as well. So, David, I see your hand is up. Go ahead.
Thanks, Lorene. As you planted, led me up the garden path, I will continue. I think it was Jordan who held the pen on number 10. I'm not sure, but I know he's been the most involved when we discussed it. I think it makes sense to blend them if we can, so yes. I'll look at it in a bit more detail. I'm not sure how it fits in with the report itself, the recommendations I can see blending, but I presume we don't move them in the report, but then we may have to juggle some wording in the report because there are different areas within it, but that's sort of a secondary thing, I guess. We'll find a way.
I mean, that makes sense to me. I realize in the narrative it may be a little, require some adjustments, but they do seem 10 actually seems to me to be a subsection of your recommendation, that when, you know, the study is being conducted, perhaps one of the particular items that should be included would be this cost of defensive registration. So, you know, that's my observation. But maybe as an action item, you and Jordan can discuss this further and see see whether it makes sense to combine these into one recommendation that's cross-referenced in the text, you know, in both places. Does that make sense?
I haven't looked at the comments on 10 yet, but we'll just figure out a way of doing it if we can. It makes sense in theory, okay. So as long as we can do it in practice, I'm with you.
Okay, fair enough. Does anyone else have questions or comments on that proposal? Okay, then moving on, the other proposal for combining, and I think this relates to Megan most particularly, would be recommendation 11, which is called out in the consumer choice section. Recommendation 11 is actually a pretty broad recommendation about the surveys being continued. But one of the particular issues that's called out as necessary for further study is regarding confusion, whether the greatly expanded number and type of GTLDs has caused confusion for the end user. And then, of course, recommendation 49 relates very specifically, it's directed at the PDP, relates very specifically to having the subsequent procedures PDP consider adopting new policies to avoid the potential for review for inconsistent results and string confusion objections. Now, these are really only related regarding subject matter. And it may be that it doesn't make sense to combine these because one is a recommendation for further study, really directed at the ICANN organization, and the other is directed at the subsequent procedures PDP and focusing on a rather particular issue about inconsistent results. But because they both raise the issue of confusion, I thought it was at least have taking a quick look and a quick read from the group about whether it makes sense to combine these in any way or cross-reference them in any way. So I raise that for the group, but I certainly acknowledge that these are different recommendations directed to different entities, but that they share this one common link in terms of subject matter confusion, consumer confusion. So asking folks their views on this, and perhaps particularly Megan. Megan, go ahead.
Thanks, Jerry. No, I agree about the cross-reference. I think that might be the best solution. Because I have adjusted this recommendation slightly based on public comments. And a lot of the public comments are more or less repetitions of what we've said in the recommendation rather than changes. So it's true that, I mean, for me it was rather straightforward and rather clear that that there were inconsistencies in the outcomes of these and the registrants and the consumer surveys should be repeated in the future. And so I think just a cross-reference to the other recommendations would be the solution. I don't think we need to change everything.
Thanks, Megan. That actually makes sense to me as well. Other folks who have questions or comments on this?
And by this is Jamie. Sorry, by this you mean recommendation 9?
Recommendation, the proposal to combine, the proposal to cross-reference recommendation 11 and 49, which both deal in some way with consumer confusion, at least in part.
Okay, no comments. Thanks.
Okay. Okay, then perhaps as an action item, we can have inserting a cross-reference in the discussion of recommendations 11 and 49 so that they reference one another. And I think that's it for that particular item. Jonathan, this was not intended to be the discussion on the merits, so to speak, of these recommendations. It was just a consolidation discussion.
Great, Lorraine, thank you. Do you have a sense of timeline for revisions to the recommendations themselves?
The whole team has been directed to and has specific assignments for their recommendations to make sure that we get this done over the next few weeks, no later than the week of August 21st. So I will actually, my own homework and action item is to come up with a schedule for folks to have their revised recommendations penned so that we can discuss these as a subteam and then during the plenary call. So that's my action item. So the short answer to your question is over the next couple of weeks.
Okay, thanks, Lorraine. Let's go back up to recommendations 9 and 11 because Megan is on the call and has held a pen on them, and I forgot that you held a pen on those. So, Megan, let's if you would talk to us about updates to recommendations 9 and 11.
Oh, good, they're on the screen. I can't do two things at once, unfortunately. Well, as I said earlier, what I've done is go through all the public comments and review them and try to clarify a bit more in the recommendation some of the issues that were raised in the public comments. I mean, there were some public comments that were just the same thing on every single recommendation, such as we don't know how much it's going to cost and we can't do anything until we do a cost-benefit, which you've all seen. And some sort of repeated what was already in the text of the report, putting a very slight spin on it or emphasizing certain aspects more or less. But I don't think that changed the recommendation per se. So in some cases, it was asked to clarify who should actually carry out the work and to provide a little bit more clarification on divisions of labor, I suppose that's the best way. So what I've tried to do is make it a little bit clearer in the recommendations without substantially changing the recommendations, because in all the cases, I think the recommendations still stand. So that's really what it is. It's trying to clarify and update the recommendations to reflect a bit more some of the issues and concerns that were raised in the public comments. That's the same for 9 and 11. And in fact, all of them. But and the revised text is on the screen. So I'm happy to take any questions or comments or whatever.
So this is Jamie. If no one else is in the queue, I have two questions.
Go ahead, Jamie.
Okay. The first one, it's not clear for, you know, from the language, continue to carry out the periodic survey, whether that is intended to be a prerequisite for every subsequent round, or is it just a prerequisite for the next, for this upcoming subsequent round? I'm just wondering whether we can clarify that. Any thoughts on that? My second concern or question is, what does it mean that it's carried out in a way to be determined in association with the PDP working group, the ICANN GTLD Marketplace Index, and any future CCT review? It seems kind of muddled in terms of what has to happen when and who's in charge. I guess the question is, what does in association mean?
Megan, do you want to field those questions, or?
Maybe we've lost her.
Yeah, she's still listed. Oh, her mic is still in.
Can you hear me now? It says that my,
hear you now.
It says my microphone is working. Ah, okay. So, sorry, I was talking over you, Jamie. You probably couldn't hear me just as well since you were talking at the same time. I thought the recommendation was quite clear, but some of the people who read it didn't understand it. There is a survey of registrars which has been carried out previously, as you know. Then a new one was carried out just during the time of the CCT review. So I think it's inappropriate for us to say this should be done every 5 years, or this should be done every 2 years, or this should be done every particular time. The point was that the periodic survey is useful and important to help ICANN, GTLD Marketplace Index. It's helpful to feed into any future CCT review, and it's also helpful to be looked at by any future PDP working group. So, I mean, if you like, I can take out the PDP working group point, because that might be a little bit clearer, but the PDP working group specifically said they wanted to be included in any such decision. But I can take it out. I'm happy to do that.
No, frankly,
I thought it was a pretty straightforward, and people all have to figure out what to do, but...
Yeah, so I have no problem with working with the PDP working group, but there are two issues. One is the initial recommendation, or the recommendation for the initial survey is that's a prerequisite for the next subsequent round. The confusion arises when you say continue doing these surveys, and does that become a prerequisite? Is the intent to make the taking of the survey a prerequisite of every subsequent round, or is it just for this upcoming subsequent round?
But it's not even necessary for the subsequent round, quite frankly, because it's been done. It's a prerequisite to the future CCT review, and if and when it's carried out, it should be done in association with the PDP working group and with the ICANN GTLD Marketplace Index. So maybe it needs to be slightly changed. The problem is this prerequisite requirement.
So the prerequisite,
the change
the prerequisite is a the prerequisite is a problem, but also the in association with is confusing because it doesn't really specify, you know, who's in charge of carrying out the survey or
but the survey is always carried out by ICANN staff. ICANN staff
doesn't
carry out, but ICANN staff manages the survey. Well, this is what was asked in the public comment.
So
I didn't have it in the first one, because I didn't think it was necessary or appropriate, but that's what was asked in the public comment.
Jamie, I think part of the, if I may, I think part of the problem is that this is tied up in this language of this is stuff already happening and the shalls and shoulds and things like that. And so I think all this extra language is an attempt to not step on toes and things like that.
And quite frankly, Jonathan, if I can come in again, it says, continue to carry it out in a timely and cost-effective manner. And that timely and cost-effective manner is what is to be determined in association with na-na-na-na-na. So they're to decide. Any CDP working group can also say, we think this should be done next year, we think it should be done in 2 years. The ICANN DTLD Marketplace Index people can say, let's do it every 6 months. And any future CCT review can say, we need it done before we continue our review. I mean, I left it sufficiently open so that it gives enough leeway so that those using these surveys, which I suppose are not going to stop, can determine their appropriate time. If you like, you can take out prerequisite. I don't really care what it's called. I always found that prerequisite and priority level rather confusing in some cases. Not in all. In some cases, it was quite clear. But in this one, which is covering a number of different goals, you can call it whatever you like, quite frankly. Maybe someone else has a better...
So I think with the prerequisite...
It's certainly a prerequisite to a next CCT review, but it's not to the other thing.
So I think with the prerequisite, it can be clarified either by making it a high priority instead of a prerequisite, or by clarifying that the prerequisite is for the upcoming subsequent round only. And then you could deal with the vagueness of in association with it. Where I said something like, after consulting with, blah, 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 carrying
That's
out
fine.
The survey as appropriate in consultation with these other groups.
Yeah, it says in a timely and cost-effective manner. So I thought that was the best assessment because people said we don't want to do it every week, we don't want to do it every year, and they implied that that's what it was saying. Prerequisite, as you remember, was a code word that we used to mean it has to be done before the next CCT review. That was our code word. That's what prerequisite meant,
right?
According
right.
to
and
our
terminology.
So I didn't use that word up. I wouldn't have called it.
Yeah. And it's the
so it has to be done.
Certainty arises with the continuous nature of this recommendation. That's all. And so if it's going to be a prerequisite, just clarifying that it's
no, but it doesn't say it's continuous. Jamie, excuse me, it doesn't say it's continuous. It says periodic survey.
Right. So
it says
exactly. So more than just before this subsequent round, right? So it,
not necessarily. It says in a timely and cost-effective manner. So this is just common sense. You would do something that makes sense under the circumstances. I can't predict the future. I don't know if there's going to be a new GTLD round. I don't know if there's going to be a new CCT review. I don't know if ICANN GTLD Marketplace Index is going to publish again. So I wanted to put it in a context that gave all those involved sufficient common sense and reasonable ability to use this in a timely and cost-effective manner. You've already invested a lot of money in doing this twice. So.
Right. I get all that, but we also have to understand how to implement this and there's the language is there. I think anyway is sufficiently open-ended and vague to create lots of debates within the community as to what is timely and cost-effective, how often they should happen, and whether or not they should be take place prior to any future subsequent rounds. And so, if to the extent that, so I have no problem with the meat of the recommendation. It's just clarity around implementation would be extremely helpful.
Can I jump in perhaps?
So, yes, sir, Lori.
So I think each Jamie and Megan both raised good points. I think a couple of things. First of all, I think what we're talking about more specifically is the Global Registrant Survey, and we probably want to call it that because that's what it's called in our report. So that there's no ambiguity about what we're talking about in this periodic survey of registrants. In terms of specificity regarding implementation, maybe we want to tie this survey to some time period prior to subsequent rounds, whenever they may be. I'm not sure we do or we don't, but if we're looking for more specificity, we might want to try and identify some sort of trigger point. When does it make the most sense to carry out this survey? And it might be, it could be actually either at a point in time before a next round or a point in time after to measure the effects. So I just offer that as a suggestion that if we're looking for clarity of implementation, we may want to think of, well, what should trigger this? When does it make the most sense? In terms of the in association language, perhaps what we want to say in terms of more precision, to be determined by the PDP working group, as informed by their discussions with points of contact regarding the pertinent initiatives. That also sounds vague, but my general concern is that I just want to finish my sentence, and then you can jump in, and I want to hear what you have to say. We have this GDLP Marketplace Index. We have the DARS. We have the Health Index, and that's what we have now. But they could change names 5 more times. 2 could be added. 1 could be subtracted. And my general observation is that the groups working on these issues are in flux, and perhaps what we want to do is just try and say, confer with the folks who are working on these types of initiatives. Don't just do it by yourself. But go ahead, Megan.
Yeah, sorry to jump in. I was just going to say I would not say that it's the PDP working group who should determine this, because this is also something that feeds into future CCT reviews, and it also is something that ICANN staff needs for the GTLD Marketplace Index. So I wouldn't want to be determined by the PDP working group. That's why I said in association with. So everyone participates. Everyone says, we need it for this time, we need it for that time, we need it for some other time. And then it's determined what the exact timing is most appropriate. But that seems to be very confusing for everyone.
I think I have to agree, it's the in association with. But maybe we just want to say to be determined by consultations among.
In consultation with, sure. Or after consulting with.
Yeah, something like
that. How about
that?
To be determined after consulting with. Okay, so maybe whoever is managing the slide, maybe you could do it in real time, and then we can see it on the screen, and I don't have to try to find it again and redo it, and then it'll be finalized.
And then just getting back to Jamie's point, which I heard you raise about whether this should be a prerequisite or not. I admit I'm still a little confused about whether it would be a prerequisite or not. It sounds like it wouldn't be a prerequisite for this round, but it may be a prerequisite for future rounds, in which case we'd have to adjust this priority.
But then just remind me, Lorraine, the prerequisite categorization was, I thought, not for next round, but for next CCT review.
I don't think so. Actually,
prerequisite
for
next round?
It was for the next, before further subsequent procedures, Megan. So whether it's a round or not, but yeah, prerequisite meant it should happen before there's any more new GTLDs.
Okay, well, that's not necessary. That's absolutely not necessary. It's certainly a prerequisite to any future CCT review, but it's not a prerequisite to a new round, because that's not necessary.
And so the CCT review milestone was actually low priority.
Okay, so change it to low then. Whoever's got it on the screen, can you change it to low? Change the level to low, and if you can change in association with to after consulting. And then that will be fine, I think.
Jamie, do those two changes address your concerns?
They do.
Consultation with and low priority? Okay.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you.
Yep. Any other questions for Megan on recommendation number 9? Do you want to move on to recommendation 11?
Sure.
Thanks.
So this one is low, and this one is, again, just updating based on the comments. And why do we have respondents' assessments as a positive contribution? I don't know why I put that in. Oops. Is it gone for you? Oh, no, there it is. It's back on my screen. So again, the comment that was made here, the most prominent comment, was that other work was being carried out by ICANN staff, particularly on the GDLD Marketplace Index, and that this work should also complement that activity. So one of the important things is to make sure that common sets of indicators and information are used across the board, so that we have similar assessments made. I don't think there was a particular problem with that, quite frankly, in analyzing either the GTLD Marketplace Index or in the surveys that we got. I didn't find a contradiction between the results or the information, but I added it in because that's what was requested in the public comment. So that's the primary change. And as you can see, the priority is low. I can't hear anyone. Is anyone talking? Jonathan, are you still there?
I can hear you, Megan. I don't know if others lost their audio.
I have been hearing you, Megan.
Good, but we seem to have lost Jonathan or whoever is running the show. Who's running the show? Not me.
Well, even Alice lost audio. Jonathan. I think we may have an issue in the room.
Maybe some people can hear and some can't. Oh. That's Interesting.
Go ahead.
Oh, Lorene can't hear. Lorene can't hear Jonathan. I can't hear Jonathan either. No, Jonathan, we can't hear you. If you're talking. It's the first time we can't hear Jonathan. Usually we hear only Jonathan.
So I'm just going to make a general point while we're waiting for audio to resume for Jonathan. In terms of terminology for the surveys, I just think as an action item, perhaps during the review process, QC we go through, that we need to make sure we all refer to the surveys with the same title, just for consistency's sake. So that everyone knows what we're talking about, because I think we settled at some point upon some convention for what we're calling each survey, and I just want to make sure that that flows through all the recommendations as well, so there's no lack of clarity there. And if we can put that as an action item so we don't forget about it, that would be super.
But, Lorene, it's an excellent idea, but would it not be better for the editors to do that? Someone said that
someone was going to edit it. Yes,
that
my suggestion is absolutely for the editors. I just want to make sure it doesn't get lost as an action item.
Yeah, no, I agree. It absolutely has to be done.
Hey, folks, I'm back. Can you hear me now?
Loud and clear.
All right, perfect. All I had said before was actually I read out Lorene's recommendation from the chat, so that's all you missed. Are there other questions about this recommendation? Okay, so let's with Lorene's note to make sure the language is consistent between the two. Let's see if we can loop Jordan in to discuss the parking paper, depending on the quality of his connection.
At the moment, I think my connection is okay. Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay, great. I'm just about to get into a...
Jordan, you're very, very faint.
Is this any better?
Not much.
Maybe not.
Unless it may, maybe it's just me, but
right, hold on
I can barely hear you.
Give me 1 second. I'm about to get in the car, and maybe that will reduce environmental noise. Yeah. All right.
I think you're fairly clear, Jordan, and just speak up, and Jamie will just have to turn off the music in his background or something like that.
Adjust my hearing aids.
Exactly. Jordan, are you still there? Well, that was short-lived. It sounds like we may have lost him in the car. I blame Jamie. Okay, let's let's skip ahead to Megan's modifications on the application evaluation recommendations 47 through 50. Megan, if you don't mind. And then when Jordan's back on, we'll pick parking back up again.
Okay, sorry. I was reading something else because I thought we were going to do parking, which I've already commented on. Can you put up the recommendations?
Jordan, are you back on?
Jordan, back again.
Yeah, this is Jordan. I just got back on.
Okay.
Better.
Right.
Hopefully more reliably.
Much better.
All right.
Thanks, Jordan.
Okay, great. So as folks have hopefully seen, I sent out a new draft of the parking paper last night. I think the three principal revisions took place, some sort of minor wordsmithing to make different points of emphasis, but I think the three principal revisions are, first of all, it had some discussions about the fact that we've sort of lost the parking adjusted calculations altogether, and how some folks had thought that it was still useful to at least express the sort of possible range of options that parking might reflect. So I added in a footnote the sort of parking adjusted calculations. I stopped calling them parking adjusted market share and just said, if you compare the market including park domains, it looks like this, and if you exclude park domains, it looks like this, with the lower number. That's just in a footnote, and it sort of says, at the extremes, this is what one alternative sort of view might look like. So I think hopefully that's sort of a balanced treatment of those numbers, and the new language is sort of more useful than not. Secondly, I introduced the new section on the correlation to DNS abuse. That includes unwritten text that relates to the actual DNS abuse study, because we don't yet haven't yet seen the actual language that the DNS abuse study is going to include, so that will have to come later. But it also includes a citation to the parking sensors paper that Kylie had sent around some months ago. That does point out that there is some parking pages have been used to distribute malware and promote scams and so on. And so to the extent we also see that correlation in the DNS abuse study, it seems to make sense to call that out. There's a footnote there that notes that Drew and I talked about this a little bit in Johannesburg. It's not clear whether the parking pages themselves are distributing the malware, if it's just like they host ads that happen to be, the ad networks have been used to inject the malware. There's actually a reference to the possibility that it's the ad networks in the parking sensors paper that's cited. So there's a footnote to that extent as well, whether it's, you know, whether it's the fact that they're parking pages or just that there's a bunch of ads on them and sometimes it has carry malware is an open question. And then lastly, there's an update to the recommendations to include some more fidelity around exactly what should be done with the parking data in terms of future studies. So those are the edits that I made last night, and I guess I'll just pause there to see if folks have questions or comments. Megan had sent out a suggestion or a question this morning, and I know Laureen had some feedback as well, so I'm happy to talk through any of that.
Laureen.
Thanks. So I have, as I think Jonathan and Jordan know, really tried to delve into this more closely because, first, I found the topic confusing, and second, I was dismayed that the handling of this at least played a role in certain unfortunate withdrawals from the sub-team. So I really wanted to make sure that, and also I observed that our discussions in this in Johannesburg were were time pressured and perhaps not under ideal circumstances. So all that is to say that I have gone back and looked at Stan's May rewrite of the competition section, and then Jordan's subsequent rewrites some emails between the sub team, the transcript of the discussion that took place when the plenary looked at parking, and then Jordan's rewrite now. And the reason I'm saying all this is to tell you that my comments are the result of a lot of reading and trying to grapple with this. And what I'm left with is I'm still not comfortable with our approach. I think that this is a very, very complicated topic. And I think what drove our even looking at this topic was our suspicion and then our confirmation that, first of all, there was a high number of new GTLDs that were parked. And it was high not only in and of itself, I think it's 68%, but it was also higher than the number of legacy domains that were parked. So I think part of that is what drove our recognition. And then I think our subsequent discomfort was, okay, we have this high number, but what does it mean? And I'm still not convinced that we have that question answered. In fact, I think we all acknowledge that we're not sure what it means at this point. But instead of reporting the figures that we do have when we adjust for parking and saying, we're not sure what this means. It could mean that this affects competition in a negative way, or it could mean that it affects competition in a positive way. We only give one hypothesis about renewal rates. We handle that in a very simplistic way, and I'll tell you that I profess no expertise here, but I have talked about this with Stan, and I have looked back at a series of emails where Stan made very specific suggestions about how he thought this should be handled and compared that to how it was handled, which was very different. We basically throw up what I see as a paper tiger, saying we looked for a correlation, we did this very simplistic analysis that, by the way, is inconsistent with the way we handled other things, and said we don't see anything, so we're not sure it has an impact, but it deserves further study. And in looking back over everything, it seems to me what we need to do is present the analysis we do have, present a range of hypotheticals, which would include not only looking at what impact parking might have on renewal rates, but also having the other hypotheticals that I think Jonathan has posited from time to time. What if parking really has this pro-market rivalry impact? What if parking actually is this incubation period that allows the new GTLDs this breathing room to figure out what they're going to be 3 years from now? So I just think we need to present a range of alternatives and then give more specific recommendations for further study. And if we're going to present one hypothesis, I think we need to present hypotheses that go in the other direction too. And then I'll leave it with the recognition that for all our other competition discussion, we treat park domains exactly as every other domain. We don't treat them any differently, even though we know they have very different characteristics. And in some you know, in some quarters they may be viewed as not contributing to market rivalry in the same way as a domain that has specific content. It's only in this section that that we deal with this issue of should we treat park domains differently? Do they have a different ramification for competition? And it seems to me that because this is the only place we deal with it, we should present the data we have, and then we should be very upfront that it's a complicated issue, that we're not sure how to define it, and if you define it one way, you may have a certain result. If you define it another way, you're going to have a different result. Basically, that it's complicated, and here are some very specific ways you can study it to get a better handle on what impact this has on market rivalry, but we're not there yet. So I know that's a mouthful and a lot of things to say, but that's where I am on this issue.
Thanks, Laureen. So, like, in terms of practical changes to the section, so are you suggesting there should be some reflection of the fact that there's other hypotheses that have been raised that they could be, that park domains could be pro-competitive, and also would you suggest calculations? Like, we could do the opposite that Stan proposed, which only include park domains in terms of market share calculations. That would seem strange to me. I would certainly believe, I mean, but it's sort of the equivalent, right? Which is to say, these are so much more pro-competitive that we'll just ignore all the other ones. That seems obviously wrong to me, in that, like, it seems clear that some non-park domains contribute to competition. So we could certainly mention other hypotheses, but I'm not sure what that means in terms of data or calculation that we might include. And then in terms of – oh, let me stop there. I have another question about the recommendation as well, but I'm just trying to get some color around what you mean by include other hypotheses.
Sure. So in terms of practical, I'll send something around that has more specific recommendations, but I would start off with an introduction that recognizes the complexity of this issue instead of launching into the figure itself, because I think you need that context. First of all, that it's complicated, and second, that this is the only place where we're in terms of our competition analysis, that we're treating park domains any differently. In terms of the hypotheticals, I would absolutely include hypotheticals that go both ways instead of just including the one on renewals. I also would acknowledge that there are different ways to define parking, and depending on how you define it, you're going to have different results. It's also unclear to me how we defined it. We give this Halverson definition, but I'm not sure we say with specificity whether we've used that or not, whether, the analysis group used that. Additional calculations, actually, I'm on the opposite. I don't think we should be doing any new work on this. In fact, I would take out that calculation on renewal rates, because the only economist on the team, even though he's no longer on the team, seems to have so many reservations about it. And as I said, I'm not an economist, but if Stan had reservations about it, then I think we need to take that into account. So those are my answers to your first couple of questions.
Basically all we have right now is a statement saying we performed this calculation and it didn't find a correlation. You're saying we shouldn't say that? We should just ignore the fact that we tried to find something and couldn't?
Well, my concern is that we didn't try to find that in a way that our economist thinks is a valid way to find it. I'd rather have it removed than have something that is done the wrong way. And again,
what we end up saying is that the null hypothesis prevailed, right? Which means that like we didn't find anything. We're not saying that there isn't a correlation. We're saying that we weren't able to see a correlation. And the current language explicitly says that a more robust study might find a correlation.
I know, but I guess I'm concerned that that's the wrong way to approach it. And I really can't say it any other way because I'm not pretending to be an economist.
It would trouble me greatly for us to have done work, had some result from that work, and not even mention the fact that it happened. Right? Like, I feel like there's nowhere else in our report where we just say, where we've done a bunch of work, and we just don't even mention the fact that that happened.
Well, I mean, if you're going to get into that point, didn't Stan create all these tables about the, aren't there a whole bunch of tables that Stan did a whole bunch of work on that are now not in here? I mean, I compared his original rewrite of the competition section that had all these tables, particularly on not the comparison to the number of new DPLDs that registered, but the concentration the concentration among registrars, which didn't change much with PART. But at that data, as I'm reading this, I don't think is in here anymore. We did all that work and it's not here.
So there is the numbers on market share are included in the footnote, and there's data that says that we also computed for market.
I'm sorry, you're...
This is Jonathan.
Yeah, go ahead, Jonathan.
I think the data acquisition... Sorry, the data acquisition itself is in there, Lorene. And the analysis performed on that data was basically downgraded to a footnote rather than elevating to this as the other charts that we include because we didn't come up with a justification for... treating parking data as anti-competitive. So I mean, it's still in there in the footnote to kind of show the range, one of the ranges of possibilities, and kind of the extreme example. But we decided collectively on the call not to include the calculations in the body of the text because absent a justification to do so, and absent a more rigorous understanding of how parking should be treated. So it is still in there.
Because I'm not talking about the registration. I think we're talking about two different things. I'm not talking about the registration, the difference in registration, which I think is referred to in Jordan's footnote 6. Right, Jordan?
I'm not looking at the document now, but there's both the market share and market concentration calculations are referenced in that footnote. There's the explicit numbers on market share, and then on market concentration it says we also computed for market concentration, but those numbers didn't really change. So that's just summarizing Stan's table, but like if you look at Stan's table, the numbers are almost identical.
Right. But that is what I'm talking about, the market concentration. I guess I would include that in a footnote because it's already done. So why not include it to show our work, as the math teachers would say? And I don't disagree, just to be clear, with including this information about the change in parked registrations from market share in the footnote. I have no problem with that. So, I mean, just to answer that question, I do think we still need to look at the second part of this footnote 6, this looked at another way language. I'm not sure that that part is accurate. That looked at another way.
So that's just a copy and paste from Stan.
No, it's not a copy and paste from his latest version, actually. It's not a copy and paste from his competition rewrite in May. It is not in that section, at least as I've reviewed it. I think you may have been looking at an older version.
Maybe. I'll take a look and try to see.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. I guess maybe it's just a question of Laureen, if you want to take a crack at the language that Jordan has surrounding the whatever analysis we did with respect to renewals, to to feel comfortable that it doesn't suggest that it's dispositive. Then that's probably worth doing. Because I think obviously the intention is not to suggest that the work that got done was dispositive. It simply didn't succeed in finding a correlation, but it didn't disprove one either. Kylie, do you want to go ahead?
Thank you, Jennifer. Yeah, actually, after the discussions, I don't have much to say. Basically, I agree with Jordan's update on the rewriting, and also I think Lauren's concern about the hypothesis only being one direction, that is all a valid point. Because I think what we are reading here, what I'm saying here is that, the parking phenomenon is not to be overlooked because of the big percentage occurred. Secondly, we do not reach a firm conclusion on the effect, whether it's positive or negative. So I just also agree with Jordan that whatever we have done, we want to leave the work of what we have already reached. For example, including that we did have a hypothesis about the renewal rate. However, after getting the data, then that does not prove anything. We do not see a correlation between the two. The two pieces of data. Okay. However, on the other hand, as Lauren mentioned, if Stan has objected to the way of calculations, we can also mention that with the themed objections about that the question about the way of calculation, about the renewal rate and so forth. So that is, we leave as much as possible to future studies. Because basically what I see is we are recommending future further studies for the parking phenomenon. So that is about that. And also I think some further rewriting and discussions between Jordan and Lauren, and I think we will make it good and acceptable by everybody. Thank you.
Thanks, Kylie. That makes sense. As far as the alternative hypotheses, I guess some of those came from me, so I can take a crack at the section on why we need more study, and here's a bunch of hypotheses, basically. And include some of the pro-competitive hypotheses. Just to clarify, Jordan, Stan wasn't recommending a calculation of just the park domains. That particular hypothesis was that when there was a redirect, you could imply that the old URL was going to go into disuse after links, et cetera, had sufficiently aged, and that it would in fact be dropped. And so one possible calculation is when there was a pointer to not count the domain to which it was pointed. That's all that was. I can take a crack at the updating that part of the language. And Laurie, if you want to just take a crack at updating the language around the renewal rate exercise that we did do, to make it sufficiently clear that it was not dispositive, that might be a good next step as well if you're up for that.
Sure. I'll send something around.
Okay. Are there other questions or comments about this?
So this is Jamie. I just have one minor comment. There's a sentence that says, because the parking rate is so large, and then it goes on to talk about what needs to be looked at. I think I suggested this before, that it would be helpful to put the 68% in context and mention there, even though it's mentioned further below, that what the parking rate is for legacy GTLDs, which is 56%, I think.
Right.
So I think it's worth, you know, it's fine to say it is large because 68% is large. But I think it's also important to just put it in context for the rest of the GTLD marketplace. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think this may make sense alongside if we were going to add some introductory text, as Laureen suggests. I think it might just be helpful to note, like, parking's like a big thing, a big complicated thing that's pervasive in the GTLD market space in general. It shows up more often in new GTLDs, but it's pervasive, it's common, it's a big issue that probably deserves more study, because it's clearly not just limited to new GTLDs, given that a majority of legacy GTLDs are also parked.
And one hypothesis for explaining the delta may be that, you know, speculation in a new market is accounts for the, you know, majority of the,
right,
or some portion of the difference from legacy and new.
Yeah, I think that is something that the Halverson paper, the citation there, it sort of talks about speculation or failed development as being possible reasons for parking.
Kylie, I assume that's an old hand, not a new one?
It's a new hand, yeah. I just want to say that I agree with Jimmy and Jordan that, we include the parking rate for the legacy GTLDs. But also because there's on an equal footing. I think that's more objective. Thank you.
Thanks, Kylie. Any other questions or comments or confusion about this that people want to raise as we go back into doing another round on this very important topic? Okay, I think we have some marching orders. Lorene and Jordan and I will work on the next rev of this section. All right, Megan, you are back up to talk about your modifications to recommendations 47 through 50. Megan, do we still have you?
I forgot to unmute the microphone. I'm back.
All right, there you are. Thank you.
Okay. So, again, maybe we should look at these again in terms of the prerequisites. At the time, I thought they made sense, but maybe we have to look at them again in terms of the priorities. So 47, yes, I think that's a prerequisite to the next run, clearly. So what I added was to make sure that the process be developed to identify, regulated, and safeguard TLDs, and to make sure that each of the actors has a clear role in the development and application of new procedures and processes. This is because, and we discussed this quite a lot in the reviews and in the development of the recommendations, this was to make sure that the way in which back advice was provided, which by the new bylaws has to follow a certain rule, has to be justified, has to say certain things, but one of the things that was important for future users or applicants was that the GAC advice also be very clear to them, that they could clearly identify what they had to do. So that's really all it does, and saying that the applicant guidebook should clearly should clarify the process, let's say that, and make sure that the timelines are absolutely clear. So that obviously goes into subsequent procedures. PDP working group, they say they're already on it, they've done everything that's necessary. I find that a bit hard to believe, but I think that doesn't mean that the recommendation can't stay, and it's certainly a prerequisite to a new round.
Questions or comments? Okay, seeing none. Megan, why don't you proceed on to the next?
Okay, and then the next one related to community-based applications, which I separated out from some of the others because it was particularly complex and particularly commented on, let's put it that way, by various different groups, including GAC, including community representatives. There was an independent report done on it. Even though the Ombudsman did an own initiative report and found that the process itself in this particular case hadn't been violated or misused, it was clear that I think almost everyone who commented on it said that the procedure in the future should be streamlined, clarified, made more transparent, et cetera, et cetera. And in the public comments, this was endorsed, but there were a couple of additional comments. So I just tried to make it even more wordy, something I don't like to do, but I did in this case, to say, in particular, these improvements and clarifications should address transparency of process, clear criteria for eligibility and objection, and recourse to appeal. Those were all in the various citations that I added in the text, but those are now slightly clearer or a bit in addition in the recommendation itself. I don't hear any voices.
Thanks, Megan. I don't hear voices either, nor do I see hands raised in Adobe Connect. I think Jamie's the only one on the phone only, so I would go ahead and
go to the next one, then.
Take this as acquiescence.
Good.
Yes.
Let's go to the 49. I can't see it on the screen yet. Yeah, come in. Welcome back. There we are. Sorry, I got distracted. Oops. So now someone's calling me. Sorry, just a second. Are you there? Sorry, I had to go and do something. So here I made a minor adjustment and added a particular additional clarification here to say that the subsequent procedures PDP should fully review the process carried out during the first new GTLC round and blah, 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 which we already had. And then I added this additional subpart to say review and clarify the criteria for each formal objection round, which was something, again, that came through in the public comments. I thought it was clear enough, but they wanted it to be even more precise. So that's all that's been done there. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, good. And then 50, this was also, I didn't change 50 because for me that was reinforced many times in the public comments. Everyone thought that a clear process for dispute resolution was absolutely essential. I put it as low because I think that it's not a prerequisite. I think it should be done, but it's not necessary to start a new round before this is done. But it has to be done before the round ends, if you see what I mean, so that disputes, the process, are clear during the next round. So if you want to change the priority, fine, but it doesn't have to be done before the launch of the new round. It has to be done before the end of the new round, if you see what I mean, so that any new dispute resolutions can follow a new approach and be clear.
Megan, this is Jonathan. I confess I'm not entirely clear on that distinction, because the way that the low priority suggests that this review needs to be carried out prior to a new CCT review and therefore wouldn't affect dispute resolutions within a future round. If we wanted to have an impact on a future round, it's either got to be prerequisite or high priority, probably, in order for it to have, for these, review to affect the way dispute resolutions are handled.
I agree, but, my reasoning was that this would not be possible in time for a next round because at the time I wrote this, which was, I don't know, maybe a year ago, I forgot now exactly when it was, some time ago, my understanding was that the PDP group was driving forward and they were ready to launch things immediately, and for me a proper review would take a lot of time and it wouldn't be done in time. But I mean, obviously it would be better if it was done before a next round took place, but can I say it's an absolute prerequisite? I don't know. It certainly wasn't the optimal. There's no question about that.
Okay.
But I find it a bit difficult to say it's absolutely essential.
George recommending, I think, that it be changed to prerequisites to notify our intentions. People can push back, but it sounds like that's our intentions. But Lorraine, you've had your hand up. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, it was just following up on the comment that you made, actually, already, Jonathan, which is if what we mean is that we want these objections and dispute resolution processes to be clarified before the next round. And I think we need to be precise and say it that way. Because as I understand it, Megan, you're saying get these dispute resolution mechanisms in place so that they are available to folks who participate in the next round. So I think that timing needs to be clarified with the concomitant change of the priority level.
Thanks, Lorraine. Jordan, do you want to verbalize your chat? Are you still able to?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I have two. They may seem contradictory points, but I don't think they are. On the one hand, I think if we think that it needs to be done prior to the
next round, it shouldn't matter if we believe that it's actually fits with the current timelines, although who knows what the current timelines are, and we should make it a prerequisite. Having said that, if it's just like, oh, we need to do more analysis, I'd be pretty reluctant to make something like that a prerequisite, especially since it's not even clear where that would feed in. You know, if we're saying the PDP needs to look at this issue, I think that's fine. That may be reasonable to put as a prerequisite. I think they'll say that they have done that already. But if it's just like, oh, there should be some more study, and it's not even clear who would consume that study, it seems very hard for me to justify calling out a prerequisite, since it's not even clear what process it would feed into that's designed to do something prior to a future GTLD release.
Thanks, Jordan. And that might be just a call for greater specificity in terms of what it is that would need to be developed prior to a new round, which I think David has touched on in his comment. David, do you want to speak up? Are you able to? I saw your microphone just come off mute.
Yep, I think so, if you can hear me.
Yes, we can. Thank you.
I mean, to me, they seem to be a necessary thing to have in for the next round. And importantly, whether or not there's an appeal system needs to be clear, because when you start playing a new round, it was something that wasn't clear, it was something that was requested. And many people didn't want an appeal because they thought it would cause delay, etc. I think those same people who wish there hadn't been an appeal probably now wish that there had been an appeal mechanism, because there probably wouldn't have been the length of delay and going through the various other accountability mechanisms. So I think you need to have that playing field clear before people start playing in it again.
So just speaking in terms of trying to clarify all these comments, it sounds like if we add greater specificity to Recommendation 50, that it addresses all of the concerns, and in other words, figure out what it is that needs to be decided and clarified, which appeal mechanism is one thing. If there's other things, then list them, and then make the determination about the future of those things a prerequisite. Does that basically address, Jordan, your concerns about, making it a specific enough recommendation to make it a prerequisite?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just has to be clear that we're making a recommendation to the subsequent procedures PDP, if that's the case, right? Like, that's really the only group that can create an appeal mechanism here.
That's right. And that's why it's aimed at them. So it maybe instead of just being a thorough review, it should say something like specifically the subproc should identify X, Y, and Z, one of them being appeals. I don't know if there's something else, David, you want to put in besides appeal.
You know what?
Sounds like maybe not.
I just walked your block over there. Yeah, it's faster than going through this traffic. All right, thanks.
Okay, so why don't we add a line at the end of this that says specifically the subsequent procedures PDP working group should clarify, should determine whether or not an appeals mechanism would be appropriate. So can you make that change, Megan?
No, I propose that I'm not making any changes. I propose that the changes be made by whoever's got this thing on the screen, and then it's done in real time, and you have the final version. Because I haven't made the changes before. That's what I asked. I presume that whoever has this online is making the changes to it at the same time. I didn't make the changes the last time.
Okay.
That was my assumption. That's why I said, can you please change it online? Because I didn't take a note of what was done the last time either. I presume that the Secretariat was going to make the changes as they went through. Because I don't have access to this version on the screen, and I don't have my Word version up on the screen either, because I'm working on something else at the same time. Sorry.
Okay, Alex, can you just make a note in the action items that we need to add a line to Recommendation 50 specific to appeals?
Yes, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Hey, Jonathan, this is Jamie. I apologize. I lost connection for a few minutes. Did you already go over 47 and 48?
Yes. Did you have questions about them?
Just a couple minor comments. They're very minor. I can send them separately or just go over them now, however you want.
I think at this point, if you'd be willing to just take a pen to those recommendations as written, then we can go over them one last time if they're minor edits, and they shouldn't have any trouble.
Okay, sounds good. We'll do. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay, I know we're basically out of time here. I just wanted to discuss a couple more items while I had most everyone still on the call. Can you, Brenda, can you bring up the heat map? So some of you may recall from our face-to-face in Johannesburg that Pablo brought up the idea of a heat map to kind of show what the trending was associated with the public comments around our recommendations and to give an idea of whether there was sort of general consensus in favor of them or general consensus away from them and sort of where that fell. And so staff put in the effort here to create a pretty heat map. Laureen has some comments about just the descriptions and column headings and things like that to, for example, make clear that the numbers across the top are recommendation numbers and to do something to clarify the area below here, what these numbers mean below the chart and to put a title on it and things like that. And I guess before we ask staff to go through that effort, I wanted to have a very brief discussion with folks about whether or not they believe that this heat map is a useful device at this juncture, because right now it's basically capturing the state of the public comments vis-a-vis our recommendations, you know, at the time in which the comments filed. So it's already changing because we're making modifications to the comments. And I guess it's unclear to me what the best use of this heat map would be at this time. As an internal tool, I certainly find it interesting. The question is whether or not this is something that has some value to be published to the public. I'm curious if there's feedback from other folks. I would say my personal feeling at this moment is that it might have made an interesting addition to the staff report on the public comments, but that at this time it would just create more questions than it would answer. But I welcome feedback on that. So specifically, I guess what I'm asking is, does anyone object to me letting this go, despite the effort made by staff to create it at our request? And I with thanks and I appreciate it, I'm just not sure what the value of this is in the public forum at this time. So if you've got an objection to letting this go, then please speak up now, because otherwise that's my intention.
So, Jonathan, I agree. As you can see in the chat, this is Laureen. The reason I agree is that we're in this stage where it's no longer going to be accurate, where our final report is going to have a different set of combined recommendations. And the other thing that I'm concerned about is we have viewed people agreeing and disagreeing with recommendations sometimes inconsistently. People can read the same comments and interpret it differently. And I don't want to create this side discussion that I don't think is very helpful ultimately about whether we're interpreting the public comments correctly, particularly when we're, you know, when we're now moving on to the next stage. So I think this is good for us to see that predominantly most people agree with our recommendations, judging by the green, but I don't know that there's any useful purpose served by publishing this.
Great. Thank you. Jordan says that it's always impression that it was something that we should use for our internal purposes, and I'm totally supportive of that. And Jordan said we should look at the areas where there seems to be a lot of disagreement and make sure that we focus on those areas. So we'll do that.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess look at your recommendations, which are the ones on which you hold the pen, and those are the numbers along the black bar on the top, and see where they fall in the seat map as a guide to how seriously we need to address them in your updates to the recommendations. But we won't be releasing this to the public. All right. Let's also finally, I've got just a couple of slides on the roadmap to final reports that I wanted to bring up for folks as well. So talk around the work that we have to do, because as I've been listening in on the sub-team meetings, they've been a little bit shorter than we'd like, and progress on making revisions to recommendations has been somewhat slow. But I just wanted to remind people about the roadmap that we all agreed to in Johannesburg. If you recall, we're going to have a final report on the DNS abuse survey very shortly, and we have a little sub-team working on the INTA survey, and including a call with Nielsen coming up shortly. And the results of those two and the additions made to the study to those two are just 3 weeks away. So we want to make sure that we make those updates as soon as we have those studies results in hand, because we're going to release the report and call for comments on the new sections or the modified sections that were modified as a result, not of the public comments, but of those two new reports. But beyond that, you can see, and that we're trying to do that by the end of August, trying to publish by the end of August. But if you scroll down on the roadmap of final report, is that, you know, we're looking at really just about 5 weeks total to finish our work on making the revisions to the public, to the recommendations, our updates to the public comment tool in Excel that describes our responses to the public comments, And so we have a mid-October deadline to get an entirely new report out so that it can be submitted by October 18th to the ICANN board. So that still remains our deadline, and I just wanted to remind people that I know this has been a marathon, but this is sort of the sprint. At the end of the marathon, when you don't have any more energy, but we need to get this across the finish line. So please, as you get your assignments from Jordan and from Maureen, take them seriously, and let's try to this boulder over the hill and deliver it out to the board by the middle of October. That's all I wanted to say. I wanted to remind people of the dates that we'd agreed to, and encourage you to focus on the recommendations on which you have the pen, and let's get this updated and out to the board. All right, and let's focus in the very near term on DNS abuse and INTA as those questions get resolved in the near term. Thanks. I appreciate your attention, the folks that are still on the call. I know people are dropping off. So thank you for your time on the call. Let's get back on top of these sub-team meetings and make them as productive as possible by getting our homework done. Thanks.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Any other business questions? Jamie?
No, I was just saying thank you.
Yeah, thanks, folks. Thanks, folks. Have a good week.
Thanks, Jonathan.